welcome to episode 271 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, the writer of MI666, and joining me this week are the creator of Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man who puts the whiz into Whizzer and Chips, Tony Esmond.
Reet.
What was that?
Geordie. I've been watching Geordie Shore again today.
Oh dear.
Catching up.
No, don't start on that already. Bloody hell. Because this week we've got guests. Yeah, we're joined by comic blogger and the force behind the blog Boys Adventure Comics. And not only that, you know, he's been a friend of the show for a while now and helped us out when we had our episode 200 as well. So he's
ran the raffle.
He's automatically and unfortunately one of the family. It's Richard Chief.
Good evening. Evening. Nice to be here.
Don, you're right.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
I love it when people go, it's nice to be here, like we've got a studio and a set. And like, yeah.
We have been compared to Parkinson, it's true.
Oh, God, really?
Parkinson's.
It's more.
That was my dodgy joke of the show.
Well done. Mark your calendars or your bingo sheets, people. That was Dan's dodgy joke of the week.
I've got to tell you, it's all going to be kicking off. Wait till you hear next week's episode when we talk about the night before.
Oh, God, yes. But you'll find out all about that next week. Or if there's a show next week, you just don't know. But this week we're going to be sort of delving into the past of sort of more of the British side of comics. And
about time.
Yeah, we've talked a lot about comics from sort of a lot of the US stuff and the big two, of course, and that's come up more and more recently, as well as, you know, we've done our focus on European comics and stuff like this. But and occasionally we do mention about like the weeklies and stuff and those classic titles that probably gave birth to a lot of creators that you like now. So we just wanted to do a focus on that kind of stuff, and Richard is an encyclopedia of that kind of stuff. Anyone who's seen his blog will know this. And also he's a brother from another mother because he's a massive fan of Stormforce. But we'll get into that.
We're banning Stormforce.
No. This is Stormforce the Stormforce corner episode. It's finally happened.
Over to Stormforce Corner.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. I should have a theme tune for that. We could have a weekly segment, Rich.
Yeah, get rid of these two losers. Come on.
Yeah.
And do you know where else is a good place to have a corner?
What's that?
Comic House.
I thought you were going to say Muller. comic.
Muller. That lady at the X-Factor did a sort of rubbed some cream on her nose during the advert, and I like that as well.
Oh, lovely. And we also like Comic House. And thankfully, they like us and stick with us because they are our sponsor.
They must really like us. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Comic House.
Yeah. They're an indie comic marketplace. UK based, but everyone from the world is welcome, as they should be in the world of comics. There's a huge selection of titles on their database. If you're self-published, you can list your book on there for free, start selling straight away. And if you're just a fan of indie comics, there's a huge selection of you that you can go on and see, and if you want to buy hard copies. But they also have an app, which more and more people need to know about or sign up to, because it's great for fans, readers, creators alike. It's just really cool. It's only £3 a month. You get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics, which is just growing week on week. For instance, what is on there at the moment, Dan?
There's a whole slew of titles. We've got Voodoo Nations Volume 1, Issue 1, It's a Kind of Magic, from Orange Cone Productions, United States book. We've got Gifts of Wandering Ice, Volume 1. That looks great.
Gifts of Wandering Ice?
Gifts of Wandering Ice, Volume 1.
Okay.
By Olga McCarrow.
Olga. I know Olga.
And we've got volumes 1, 2, 4 of Blop Shop minis. Alex Henn.
And he's
uploaded them for us to read. So fantastic. I'll go and check them out.
Good stuff, man. He's a good creator. Funny stuff, that is. Yeah. You reviewed one a while ago, didn't you, Vince?
Yes. We spoke to him, I think it's Nottingham, last the interview show. And I got one of his books to give to you as a gift. Do you remember, Tony?
That's right. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Is it Blop Shop? Is that I'm saying that right?
Is it Blop Shop?
Yeah.
He's definitely a great.
That was the one that came in the little brown paper bag that you got me. That one.
Yeah, it was class. So definitely, go to Comic House, have a look at that stuff, discover loads more because there's tons of stuff on there, from past guests, future guests, who knows? There's loads of stuff on there. It's a 14-day free trial. You can dive headfirst into the world of small press. We talk about every week if you go to comichouse.com. And also, if you're an all-ages creator, then get in touch with them and get your books on there, because people do check these out, and you know, you'll see a return on it. So it's great.
Nice.
And reeling from that somehow it's half professional sort of sponsorship ad.
Was it?
Yeah, we made it through in probably record time.
Oh, it's true, actually. Yeah,
we did go off on a tangent through that.
About poo or something. Yeah.
Maybe The Guardian will write an article about us.
I love The Guardian. The best thing about them is they've got such a wide view of comics.
Such a wide view.
Dan Malley is a big fan of The Guardian.
I was just chatting to Dan, actually, funny enough. There you go. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Dan.
Yeah, happy birthday, dude. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Happy birthday. And I just saw on the Skype then, Dan B left and then Dan B joined again.
Yes.
I thought we were going to get another view of his fake background.
No, we're not going to talk about that because no one wants to know about that.
It was all very real, that background, I'm sure.
The amount of money it costs for us to stand there, the whole show.
With a top off.
Oh, dear God. Anyway, the reason I mentioned
other backgrounds are available.
The reason I mentioned I've got the Chuckle Brothers as one of my Zoom backgrounds. Anyway, I don't know why.
Sad. That's quite sad.
It just looks like my two dads, like the modern version. Oh no!
You didn't introduce me to your dad. I saw your dad from a distance once, and I could see you looking nervous, thinking, "Please don't come over, Tony." And say
yeah, I mean,
fair enough.
I mean, they just wouldn't understand. Oh dear. Anyway, the reason I just brought up a popular national newspaper is because recently there was a bit of an article, wasn't it? I haven't read this, but
yeah.
What is this about?
We're
going to talk around.
Let me fire up the article.
So it comes from Down the Tubes. It's not written by John, is it? It's written by someone else. So I did message John about it. Can't think of the name of the guy who wrote it.
Yeah, that's what I'm just trying
to... He is a comics creator, isn't he, the guy who wrote it?
He is, yes. So if you can just fill it a bit, Tony, I'll quickly look at stuff
what?
On there.
Yeah. It's something about Phil Collins.
I'll put my finger in it. There you go, that's filled it up.
Is that... No.
No?
You've got a big finger.
Dan, why aren't you prepared for this?
Yeah,
why?
Come on, Dan.
I completely forgot about... I thought let's talk about this subject. And it's called Who Guards the Guardian? And it's written by Sean Michael Wilson.
Right. Okay.
And it's an article discussing the Guardian's coverage of graphic novels in the UK and how it seems to be relatively limited to a certain selection of publishers / creators. And the author, Sean, is saying, look, there's a bunch of stuff out there. Why not include that? Why are you limiting your view to all this set selection?
And this is from The Guardian, who is one of the few sort of newspapers that are putting a spotlight
I think it counts The Observer, doesn't it? I think as well as part of it. Okay. I know that's the Sunday version.
For instance, they've had the competition, haven't they? The yearly competition, the graphic novel competition. And,
it's in The Observer, isn't it?
Yeah. And things like that. So you don't get this sort of attention from a lot of the mainstream news media and stuff.
It says in there, like, for 58% of the Guardian reviews, they just come from four publishers.
Yeah.
And 4% from just two. So.
And they're reasonably small publishers. It's not like it's Marvel or DC or Image or anything like that. It's publishers that they're probably pretty much reviewing nearly every graphic novel that those companies release, I'm guessing. Is that right? Or
could well be. I don't know their output, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, I know it's only a secret. One of them is Self-Made Hero, isn't it? So they put out quite a lot of books, but...
It's Drawn and Quarterly, Jonathan Cape, 7 from Fantagraphic and 5 from Self-Made Hero.
Right, so fairly limited. I mean, this is what Uncle Pat talks about, isn't it? He talks about the hamsterdization of comics and there's a certain snootiness going on. And I think, I don't know whether it feels like this may be at the spearhead of it for me. There's a much wider area of comics that they seem to be ignoring there.
And these, like, even if it was like topics or genres or things like that, that some of these medias will be like, oh no, this isn't literature, this isn't about this, that and the other. Anyone who's listened to this show or has been to a indie comic con or something like that, just know the width and the breadth of different types of topics and conversation that has happened across the board from individual creators to other small press publishers is huge.
I mean, to me, playing devil's advocate, are they sticking with what they think is safe and what their readers will like? I mean, the Guardian readers are a group of people. That's the reason they're called Guardian readers by people on Twitter, aren't they?
Do people submit to the... When it comes to the review...
Oh, of course,
Do a lot of people submit to the Guardian?
Yeah, I think so. As far as I understand it, yeah.
They've got Rachel Cook in The Observer is the graphic... She has one page a month in the new review section where she looks at graphic novels. So there's a page that is 1 week it's poetry, 1 week it's graphic novels, 1 week it's something, you know. Right. So she often covers one particular title, you know, apart from it, the end of the year where she might, you know, roll through a few more. But that's still only, you know, one book a month, you know, that she's able to cover.
There's coverage out there. I mean, so, you know, coverage is good coverage, hopefully.
I don't think this article's limited to the... Because I know The Observer, I know what you're talking about there. It's like a magazine they release, isn't it, Rich? Is that what you're talking... It's called The Review, is it? Is that what you mean? That little A5.
Guardian has the Guardian Review.
No, that's the Guardian Review, which comes on us. I am a Guardian reader, so it's on my high horse here. That's The Review, which comes with the Guardian, the weekend Guardian on a Saturday. Yeah. But there's the New Review, which is a broadsheet sort of supplement that comes to The Observer on a Sunday.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But The Review does feature comics occasionally, doesn't it, as well? I'm right in thinking?
Okay. I mean, it has cartoons in it. So Tom Gould, you know, he's not talking about comics, but he's in there every week. I really like Tom Gould's stuff.
Yeah,
Where's My Jetpack or whatever it's called.
Yeah, it's great.
And I think they're certainly, you know, open to it, and you know, I'm not going to go at Brian Talbot, you know, but I imagine, you know, Brian Talbot, you know, would have enough, you know, reach for, you know, the Guardian to put a piece in there about him.
I get what you're saying there as well, and I think that only doubles up what I'm saying, is that you feature books that you think are going to sell your paper. Yeah. And I think that's what they're doing, isn't it? Is that right? I mean, they wouldn't review Civil War, for example.
No. They're not reviewing. No. So Rachel Cook in The Observer, she's not reviewing Marvel and DC. You know, she is reviewing the sort of the titles that are in this article by Sean Michael Wilson. You know, she will be picking out titles from Drawn and Quarterly. You know, Jonathan Cape, who I guess published, Jonathan Cape still published Posey Simmons? You know,
I think so.
I might expect to see Posey Simmons in there. Obviously, she has a long relationship, long history with The Guardian. So I might expect Rachel Cook to be picking up these sorts of publishers.
I think there are a few reviewers. I mean, Zainab Akbar used to write for them, didn't she? But she doesn't anymore. They have a few people who write for them, don't they? Who sort of come and go a bit, I think, elsewhere. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in terms of like the topics, I mean, like, we can understand that, for instance, like Vanguard or the Red Mass from Mars or Knights versus Pirates, you know, they're probably not going to be mentioned.
No.
But, and you know, it's fine. I mean, I can understand when certain reviews, you know, like, I don't expect my stuff to necessarily be on the Culture Show. Do you know what I mean? It's like, that's fair enough. But there are other sort of indie creators out there and small, you know, like the folks at Good Comics and things like that. You know, there's lots of people doing lots of interesting stuff that isn't what a lot of people would necessarily term as comics.
Yeah.
That could be that the Guardian, you know, should maybe focus on a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, I know all the major companies submit to, they have a long list of people they submit to, don't they? Yeah. I'm sure. Speaking from experience, but I think you kind of got to have it. If you're a national newspaper, you've got to be a bit more representative of.
Yeah.
And it's not. But I suppose self-made hero. There's Guardian readers who go, oh, there's a new self-made hero book out.
Yeah.
Therefore, they'll read the review. They might buy the newspaper to read the review. You know, there's that sort of thing. You got to sell papers, don't you? I suppose is the old story.
Yeah.
Same as putting a pair of tits on page 3 in the Sun sold papers. You know what I mean, it just depends who you're aiming for, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can stand that, but like, I would have thought you're going to have to excuse my ignorance because I don't read The Guardian, but would Avery Hill pop up there or Nobra? They seem like ripe fodder for kind of...
I think occasionally Nobra have, yeah. Yeah, I think okay. So. Like I say, I'm not a reader of them either, but yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting article that I think people should read. And this is, obviously, we talk about this not as in a like, God, this is terrible that they're doing this. Because it's got an article about fucking reviewing graphic novels that you need to check out. One of the reasons this show exists is so more people discover things like this.
Yeah.
So
I think what it does is what John Freeman's and, forgive me, who's the name of the writer again, Dan? Whatever the name of
Sean Michael Wilson.
Sean Michael Wilson. What they've done is that's a proper piece of journalism, as far as I'm concerned, because they went back through and they took the numbers and they presented a case as balanced as they could about, you know, perhaps they could be finding other comics and this is who they actually review. And that's journalism, to be fair. And that shows a balanced view. And I think perhaps maybe The Guardian should show a bit more of a balanced view and review from other companies. But I'm not in charge of The Guardian and I don't pay the wages of the people who buy, you know, who work at The Guardian. So, what can you do?
Yeah. The last one, I just looked up Rachel's sort of profile on The Guardian, and the July article that she wrote was a drawn and quarterly book, Wendy, Master of Art by Walter Scott.
Okay, all right.
I'm not familiar with that, but you know, obviously, it's one of the titles, you know, one of the publishers that's in Sean's article there, and yeah, it certainly doesn't look like, you know, anything out of Marvel or DC.
No.
Yeah,
and I think one of the important things that we can say about that is none of us are really aware of that book, and isn't the point of these sort of reviews and articles that you're looking at stuff that you didn't know about that maybe you want to check out? I mean, you know, thankfully.
I mean, I'd rather have that coverage than not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Completely. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it's interesting, and certainly all you publish out there, you know, just submit your stuff. You never know.
Do you have some positive comic news as well?
Oh, good. Here we go.
Well, this wasn't necessarily negative, was it?
No.
It's
even more positive news. The latest Dogman outsells every other books, comics or not, in North America.
Oh, good stuff.
Since his debut. It went to number one, bestseller's book.
And that's, they reading a couple of articles on this, these books are the books that are keeping the comics figures high, aren't they? Because we are seeing a little bit of a rise in it. And it's this stuff like that, and Smile by Talgamider, is it, and all that sort of thing that's keeping the books.
Yeah, Talgamider just an absolute juggernaut of a. Because that's the. What's the name of that? Scholastic. And hold on, I've got one here. What is it? Yeah, The Graphics, which is an imprint of Scholastic and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I could pretty much go to any supermarket around here, and I'll be able to pick up a Dogman.
That's great, isn't it?
I think we should definitely do a show sort of focused on this, because it's a massive bit of comics that certainly within, you know, this community that we talk, that we're massively, you know, that we're part of or connected to or anything, this is it's huge, but not necessarily people are talking about it.
My 8-year-old loves Dogman, you know.
All right, okay.
Room of vintage British comics upstairs. Ha! Will she read any of them? But you know, a bit of El Defo, Smile, anything with Dogman on the front cover. Yes, please, have my money. You know, take it, take my money.
Yeah.
She loves it. So you know, I'm hoping that, you know, that's the feeder drug to you know, get her into eventually coming around to my way of thinking about vintage.
Yeah, British exactly. Comics. Yeah, nice.
And a lot of these people who are doing these books, with that sort of like those sort of sales and that kind of following, that leads to comics as a full-time job, and that's a rare thing in this day and age, isn't it?
That's what we need.
Is it Scholastic used to put out the Bone books, didn't they? It's been obviously a huge seller, huge success for Jeff Smith, and I wonder, you know, if there's an element of them going, there's a market here, you know, what can we take, you know, to fill that market? Because, you know, we know it exists now, you know, we have proof, you know, Bonus paved the way.
And there's so many creators who understand how to create those sort of books, because it's not an easy thing to create. I mean, these are the sort of books that, I mean, God, they probably would have, you know, if I was a kid now, it would turn up in my school library or something like that, a primary school library or something like that, and I would have absolutely loved it. You know, and that's how you... you get people into comics if you just, you know, if I was a kid and I was just in the school library and I would have seen one of these books, I would have been like, oh my God, you know. I mean, I picked up Asterix. Every Asterix book that I saw in the primary school library, I'd pick up from and things like that. And that's how it starts. That's how you get kids into these sort of books, isn't it? And then, you know, if they're good, then it just grows and grows and grows. If your kids are reading comics, it's just amazing anyway, isn't it?
Then you end up doing a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah,
wasting your Sunday nights for years.
End up waking up with a tiger in the room next Sunday morning.
Yeah. Dear God.
When I said I was coming on this podcast, my oldest daughter and my wife both said, wow, I can't believe there are so many podcasts out there. And my youngest daughter said, wow, I can't believe they talk to everybody interesting.
Oh dear.
You can have her as a guest if you want.
Yeah, which reminded me, there was a moment that I saw on Twitter how... Dan Butcher, how your kid completely laid the smack down on you when you told him to go to bed after playing Fortnite.
Oh yeah, to get out all the time.
Yeah,
it's just getting kids playing video games this way, go to bed is an error.
Yeah,
you should not do
it. Didn't he shout, "There's no way you can redeem yourself," or something? Yeah, like that. He said to you,
"He hated me, and there's no way I can redeem myself in his eyes," or something.
That's pretty severe, man. Are you two all right?
Yeah, no, it's fine. In the morning, it's like it's all forgotten.
Yeah,
there's no way you can redeem yourself.
Bloody kids. Yeah, no way.
Give a shout out to the dog later. Stop it.
Kids, eh?
Yeah. I know.
He's not even a teenager yet.
So we're clear, when we're at the strip club on Saturday, early hours of Sunday morning next week, I'm going to shout that at you, Vince.
There's no way you can redeem yourself.
Yeah.
Look.
When you're vomiting in the toilet. Listen.
The thing is, I actually know these are all empty threats. But speaking of being kids and reading comics, though, that brings us nicely to this week's topic. Because as we said, we're going to delve into the past of UK comics a bit, just shine a light on some of the some would say the glory days of comics, but you know, when comics are popular, it's always a glory day. I think comics are glorious anyway, but we've talked a little bit about books that have influenced us or we loved and stuff, and there's certainly, you know, titles. We put a post up earlier today and looking at just doing a Google search for some of the covers, you just think they were churning out some amazing stuff just in the 80s and you know, late 70s and stuff. So away from the monthly sort of comics of the American juggernauts that captured our imaginations at a certain age, more to the weekly books and the strips that sort of formed our minds and, like I say, the hearts of a generation of comics fans, readers and creators to this day. If you're not from, we want to say, obviously this is a UK podcast, but we have people from all over the world that listen to us.
Yeah, and they don't understand this, a lot of Americans especially, do they? They don't understand the culture of the weekly comic that we used to have here, that used to be like bigger than the culture of the monthly comic for them.
Yes. Yeah. So obviously we're going to talk about some books that you may not know about, whoever you are, where in the world. If you're not from the UK, you may not know about some of the titles we talk about, but they are some absolute classics. There's some collections. If you just Google and do some search out some more info, Richard's blog is a fantastic resource to find out. Because part of the joy that we have on this show, certainly, is, for instance, we find out about an older book from Europe, and all of a sudden we look back and think, bloody hell, this has been going for 20 years. You know, you never know stuff that will influence you in any way, shape or form.
The only problem with Rich's blog is he doesn't put enough out. You know, he just sits there.
Just lazy. Just absolutely lazy.
That's a joke. Put out one.
Yeah, no, it is a joke, because, and I think we should start off with this, because obviously, Rich, your blog is pretty frequent. You talk about lots of different things. It's called Boys Adventure Comics, but how did the whole sort of thing start, and what made you think, oh, I just want to write about all this stuff?
Oh, it's like my origin story.
Everyone gets one, even you.
Where did it come from? It came from, so I guess I've always read comics, and I've written about comics on and off, the original, so I was into like the 80s Eagle and Dan Dare, and that got me, it was you know, I could then realize that, oh, there was this 50s Dan there as well. So I was into, you know, the original Eagle magazine, and I'd done some writing on that subject. And I guess I then got involved in a new Eagle fanzine, which John Freeman from Down the Tubes took over editing. So I guess I got to know John that way. And so I wrote for that fanzine, and I wanted to do more writing to sort of feel as though I was contributing rather than just stockpiling all this stuff in my spare bedroom. I was, giving something back because, I don't want to have all the, it's not exciting to me to have all this stuff in my brain. Actually, what's more interesting, more useful is to have it out there as a resource. So I was doing a little bit of writing for John Freeman, but I had a young family at the time, and I couldn't sort of sit down every night, for sort of 2 or 3 hours and write 1,000 words on, whatever topic, I had in mind. I just didn't have that time. And I found that, I was just sort of, I would sort of almost do anything because I didn't have 3 hours available. I would just think, it's not worth it. I won't do it. Put it off, put it off. But I wanted to do something more. And eventually I thought, actually, a blog is probably a good way of just being able to do something short and snappy. It's not the same as, being able to write, a nice article for John on a sort of a topic, sort of comics history topic, but, it'll scratch that itch for me. So I started doing the blog just over four years ago.
Yeah, 2016, I believe you.
And I just thought, I would just see where it, where it went, because I was like, I've got a room full of comics here, there must be some interesting stuff in here, and hopefully stuff that other people find interesting as well. So that was where I started, and the only rule I had at the start was that I wanted to blog every day. That was the rule. It's a ridiculous rule. Nobody's making me do this.
That's the OCD of the comic collector, isn't it, though? You've got to stick to it now. Forever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've got to stick to it. I've got my streak. I've got my 1,500-day streak now.
Yeah, saw that. Yeah, nice.
I just thought, I would give it a go. And, to my mind, it's worked really well. It's worked as an advert, for me. And it's, landed me some, paying writing gigs that, that I wouldn't have got otherwise. And I've been, there are some days where I think, shit, what am I going to put up on the blog tomorrow? Because I don't really, there isn't enough time, even in these lockdown times, to be sort of planning months ahead with it. And there are other writing projects, that I'm working on as well. So, there's a bit of plate spinning going on to make sure that, I'm not losing track of what I want to do and when I've got to send stuff in for people. So, I put up, an eclectic mix of items, either from my collection, often from my collection, but, sometimes, I might run an interview or, a particularly interesting thing I've seen or, a new collection that's, coming out from the Treasury of British Comics. And, once upon a time, we'd have, I'd have covered the sort of the comics events that were going on in London that I would have gone to. So that's what it is. It covers everything probably from like the original Eagle, so from the 50s up until now. And I often use it not as an opportunity to, to show off about my collection, but to challenge myself to say, here's a thing. And I know I don't know everything about this thing. What, can anyone help fill in the gaps in this, whatever this topic is, this obscure comic series about which I can't find anything. I can find issue 1 and issue 10, but, what did the stuff in between look like? Can anyone help? And then, slowly, you fill in a couple of the gaps, you rerun it, fill in another couple of gaps, 6 months later, you buy another comic. And so, sometimes, the sort of the article, repeats itself, but I'm adding in more stuff each time.
Yeah, you do updates to things, don't you?
That's what I like about it, is it's that you treat it as an investigation. I always remember, is it Power Comics? That was like a long form investigation into a Nigerian comic company that came up in the, was it early 80s, late 70s? Sort of then.
In the late 70s. It's Dave Gibbons and Brian Bolland's early work for Nigerian publisher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty interesting, yeah.
And there's, hundreds of pages of their artwork. And so this comic was coming out once a fortnight, and they were doing sort of one issue on, one issue off, as it were. So basically, you've got a month to draw this whole comic. And it started off with a, I know this thing is out there, I know it exists, but so I just started off trying to capture, just find all the images I could of this comic. And I was like, you know, that would be enough. You know, I still don't actually know how long it lasted for, but I know more about it than I did. And it was just, you know, an opportunity to say, you know, what is this? Who remembers this? You know, it was predominantly for sale in Nigeria, although later issues, you know, they're marked up as being for sale in this country as well.
I got a feeling, was it Eclipse Comics got hold of it or someone like that, was it?
And, for a couple and then of there's like a four issue, yeah, sort of yeah. reprint series that they did with it as well.
Okay.
But yeah, but I mean, you know, really early, you know, so there's, you know, there's probably 30, 35 issues of this. So half of that
is
Dave Gibbons, half of it is Brian Bolland. And there's a lot in there. You know, these are long strips, you know, they're doing.
And they're so much sought after creators. You know, we think, you know, when you've got a creator like Bolland, especially, there's not a huge amount of sequential work done by him, you know, compared to some other creators. And it's the people crying out for that, I would think.
Yeah. And Carlos Esquerra, he's got early art by him in it. Eric Bradbury, another guy who worked on British comics for a really long time. And there was one, so I was sort of collating these images, but, you know, I couldn't, you know, really afford to collect the comics, you know, because when they come up for sale, they can, you know, they're often, you know, going for quite a lot of money, you know, for a single issue. And somebody in Canada, you know, had found, you know, a batch of these. I can't remember, you know, maybe from a relative or something. Anyway, and they had Googled it. And just by Googling Power Man Nigerian comic or whatever, my blog came out at the top of the hit list.
Nice.
So they just emailed me and said, oh, we got these batch of comics, you know, you want to buy them? Like, oh, yes, thank you very much.
Amazing.
So
that's great.
Yeah, and you caveated your email with, they're probably not worth much, but I'm willing to do this.
So, yeah, you know, to get sort of, you know, a run of 10 issues like that, you know, was fantastic. But a lot of these comics, you know, I'm not, you know, as much as I, you know, a comic nerd and obsessive, you know, likes, you know, collecting some of these things. Some of them, you know, are just, you know, are so obscure that you have to think, actually, you know, it's not going to happen collecting all of these. So what I'm just going to, you know, what I'm just interested in is, you know, either a snapshot of, you know, this is what's, you know, in this title. So if you, you know, if you find something from this run, well done you, and it will probably have these sorts of artists in, you know, this one will have, you know, Dave and Brian, you know, and maybe Carlos as well.
And your blog also has lots of, it serves as a sort of like a museum of curios as well, do you know what I mean? Sometimes it's nice to just look at these articles and just see like these old books from like the 50s or 60s or for instance, a book I'm going to talk about later, which is an art book, is a huge fan of like pulp covers and pulp artwork, and like seeing, I mean, has that sort of pulp aesthetic ever been more popular than now, do you know what I mean? And you look at these old covers of like Western books or, you know, war books or whatever it may be, and it's just fascinating to look at them and just see how beautiful like the artwork is, even if you see even if it's like a photo of a tatty old comic, but that gives it character as well, doesn't it? That you know, there's just, I love looking at stuff. I mean it's a comics blog, so it's got to be a visual medium, isn't it? So you must you got a lot of pictures on. And I did notice on your blog as well, like you got lots of labels, because obviously you know, so people can find things. So you know, if they just want to pick a year, you've got years, as I can see here, from like 1951 all the way up until 2021. So you know they're talking about everything. There's creators and all kinds. So when you're writing a blog, is that something you make sure you note things like that, like certain years, so people can search for, you know, because you've been doing it for quite a few years now.
Yeah.
Some of these things that people probably want to look for, or just sort of like, oh, I remember that comic when I was a kid. They're not necessarily going to see it when you go to a homepage. Right? So these sort of indexes are hugely important, really, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And certainly with the years, I didn't put the years on at the start. I was just doing like the creator or the title. And at one point, I did start going sort of retrospectively going through and putting the years on, because actually,
Jesus, that's a lot of work.
I did about 50 and I thought, oh, bloody hell, you know, this is a lot of work, and I suppose we've got the time at the moment to do it. But I haven't finished that, but I would like to, because I think, you know, that is really important, so that you can take, you know, that snapshot of a year, you know, I think that'd be really interesting to be able to say, you know, what's the sort of comics were coming out, you know, in this year, and you can compare and contrast. But yeah, putting the labels on, you know, I find so useful, because there are, you know, plenty of comics created on there that I think, oh no, you know, I recognize you as a name. But then there'll be other people think, I don't really know who you are, but I'll put you in. And then you go, oh, you're that person who did that thing. Oh, that I wrote about 3 years ago. Yeah. And you know, just in a way that you would never make that link. You would never be able to do it, cause, you know, unless you've got, you know, some amazing brain. But it's just the way you can do it. And it's just fantastic. And, you know, if somebody's, you know, got a thing on Facebook about, oh, you know, who remembers, you know, Barry Mitchell, what did he draw? And he's like, oh, right, you know, I don't know, let's have a look. Oh, I've covered him 10 times. Here we go, bosh, you know.
Yeah.
That's a quick answer to that question. So I like to use it to sort of answer questions like that. Again, not to show off or blow my own trumpet, but as a, well, look, you're genuinely interested in this because you've asked it as a question, and I've covered an element of it, and I'm not saying that's all the stuff he ever drew, but, you know, here's half a dozen titles that he worked on that you might enjoy. So,
It's good to have that record, because the amount of times I've reviewed a book and forgotten it. Do you know what I mean? I do that all the time. Someone say, oh, you know that book you reviewed, and they start talking about it. I'm thinking, which one is this again? Yeah. And to have that, to be able to, it's you really need it, don't you? That's really good.
Yeah. What has doing a blog like this been like for rediscovering some of those old books, and, like, you know, seeing them with fresh eyes now? Because obviously we saw these things on the weekly stands, we picked them up and we read them and we reread them, and then, you know, if you're lucky, you've got to put them in a box and you've still got them many years.
They mostly
later.
Fell apart.
But reading them now, as we all know, whenever we've read, whether it be an original book that you picked up at a comic mart or a reprint, it's a different experience, isn't it? It's sometimes it's almost a religious experience because you enjoy it in a brand new light.
Yeah.
What has that been for you, and what have been some of your highlights of picking up some of this older stuff?
So like I say, you know, when you pick up some of these older things, you know, often, you know, if you pick up a fanzine or something, you know, I like collecting old, you know, comics fanzines, because, you know, there is no internet of the 1970s. You know, if you want to know what was going on and what people thought about early issues of 2000 AD, for instance, then you have to get a fanzine, you know, of the time to see, you know.
And back then, a lot of the time, people didn't hold back, did they, with their opinions?
Those letters columns, you know, you could really get into it. So I love, you know, sometimes, you know, you pick one of those up and you think, oh, right, well, what I'm going to do is I'm definitely going to do this thing about this fanzine. And then you think, well, I better just have a flick through the rest of it and just have a look. And then you flick through and go, whoa, hang on. This is, you know, there's a bit of Brian Bolland here. You know, hang on.
Yeah.
I might have got it years ago, and either, you know, you didn't clock it at the time, or it's somebody, you know, who was, you know, like an overnight, you know, a 20-year overnight sensation, like somebody like Sean Phillips. You know, you go, oh, hang on, this is, you know, Sean Phillips, you know, this is some of his early girls comics work.
Because I know a lot of guys would draw in, I mean, a lot of those old fanzines, like A1 and Arkansas and stuff like that, had covers done by people who were, you know, existing big names. I know Kevin O'Neill did some covers, didn't he? And Brian Bolland did some covers, and Steve Dillon did some inside illustrations and stuff like that. There were some names who worked on them.
Yeah, some big names. Yeah. I've got I've picked out some Steve Dillon ones for a post I've got later on in the year. But yeah, it's when you go through them and you go, you know, some of the names, you know, you would have clock the first time around, because you go, that just looks like a Dave Gibbons picture, so, you know, it is. And then some of the others is a bit more, you suddenly go, oh, hang on, you know, is that who I think it is? Or sometimes it's about, you know, I've picked up pictures and think, well, I don't know who that character is, but it's by Brian Bolland, you know.
Yeah.
Can somebody help me out with it? Because, like you say, you know, it's an investigation of, you know, here's the thing, you know, if you like, you know, Brian Bolland, then I did a thing a while ago on, like, the for BEM, B-E-M.
Yeah, we talked a bit about BEM. That's a great old fanzine. Although the problem with a lot of those fanzines, and that one especially, is you need 20-year-old's eyes to read them sometimes. So the type is like 0.9, and it's, you know. But yeah, no, that's a really good one.
Oh, a panelologist.
We've got a couple of them. Yeah.
So not only is that really small print, but there's a couple of issues where they go, I think columns are outdated.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they think there was a bit of white space at the bottom right. We'll draw a line and yeah. then we'll turn it sideways and type sideways there. Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, the sort of, yeah, diagonal columns are the future. So we're going to have this whole page is in diagonal columns. Jesus, what is that? Oh, my God, it's, like, it's unreadable. But, yeah, so I did a piece on, like, on Brian Bolland's artwork for BEM because I thought, well, actually, you know, sometimes, like you say, he does the covers. Sometimes he does a bit of interior art. Sometimes yeah. they've picked it up, you know, from a show he's been to. You know, so there's all sorts of, you know, if you're a sort of a Brian Bolland, you know, completist, you know, there isn't a catalogue of his work. You know, there's no catalogue resume out there of his work. So I was just like, look, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to, you know, broach his copyright or anything. But, you know, if you're a collector of his work, then by the way, you only need to look for these issues. If you're thinking, well, he did a lot of work for Ben, maybe I better buy that issue of Ben 15 for 20 quid on eBay, buy it now. Yeah. You know, he's probably in there. It's like, well, he's not. You know, yeah. I've done the hard yards for you. I've already splashed out the money and bought it and gone through and gone, there's no Brian Bolland in there. Or there is, but it's just another advert for, you know, people like us shop at Forbidden
yes.
Planet.
Yeah. And he did some great covers. He did do some great covers for them, didn't he? He really yeah. did. Yeah.
Yeah. So, some of the covers for some of those fans, like I say, are by very established people or by people. I did one a while ago on Colin Wilson, who worked yep. for 2000 AD, you know, worked on the Blueberry strip in France. And because he comes over from New Zealand, you know, he's living in London in the late 70s, early 80s. And you could, it's really interesting, sort of one issue, I think it's Ben, you know, he's on the cover.
I don't know, like issue right.
36. And then if you sort of track back, you can see, well, in issue 34, he had sort of the inside front page. Issue 32, he's got a sort of a bit of a, you know, halfway through the magazine, you know, end of a column, you know, medium-sized picture. You go back in another couple of issues, you know, and he's really sort of grown from that sort of, in that first issue he was in, he had a very small picture. But, you know, he's grown, he's developed, you know, he's become more well-known, he's moved on to higher profile stuff. And he's, you know, he sort of really climbed the ladder to, this yeah. is how you get, you know, to be on the cover of BEM.
Yeah, because I think some of the circulations of some of those magazines were pretty high. Yeah, they used to sell them off the shelf in Forbidden Planet and all that sort of thing, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, for a number of them, you know, if you do want to get out there and collect a run of something like Ark and Sword or, you know, Ark,
yeah.
as it became, you know, the really early paper copies, obviously it's all made of paper, but what I mean is the.
Yeah.
Not those really, really early digital copies.
The ones that were made on of stone, the really early.
Yeah. It's been running a long time, actually, if I'm honest. with the glossy covers, you know, you can put together a collection of those, partly because, you know, they're printing them in enough numbers and they're of enough quality that they survive because people would read them and sort of treat them with respect. So there are a number of those sort of Arkansas.
Speakeasy is another one that I used to collect. I used to get through the post. Yeah. And that went through a number of different formats. For a while, it was like a fold-out newspaper format. I had those. They were quite
really
cool.
Terrible paper. Really terrible paper.
Like 2000 AD paper. Yeah, it was. Yeah.
So Speakeasy. So again, you know, that's, you know, if you want to go back and try and find out something of the time, you know, this is the only place, you know, you can look. You know, like I said, there's no internet in the 1970s. You know, you've got to look at things like this. So for something like Michael Owen Carroll, who blogs a lot as well, you know, as well as being a fantastic writer, a Judge Dredd writer.
Yeah.
I'm often sending him snippets of information because, you know, he's a fantastic blogger and, you know, really, really interested and got a lot of data about, you know, comic start dates and end dates and, you know, titles over like the last 150 years. You know, it's a real, you know, amazing project. But it's so, you know, sometimes it's just like, look, this comic ended at some point in the 1990s, and I don't know when. And it's like, right, well, the only way to track that down is you've got to go back to, you know, the source material that existed at the time, which is maybe Comics International. It's maybe, you know, Dennis Gifford's newsletters that he was putting out. It's maybe Speakeasy, you know, but unless you've got these things to hand, you know, you don't know, because it's some of these things are very unclear. It's just like, well, this bit of Wikipedia says it ended on this day and this other bit of Wikipedia says
you can't really trust Wikipedia a lot of the time, can you? That's the problem. You're right, man, this stuff's disappearing unless we make a note of it. There's the corporate memory that they recall it now, don't they? It's slowly disappearing and people don't remember this stuff. You've only got to look at the most, the blaring mistake of that was when they credited Stan Lee as creating Captain America in that issue. And you're like, who on earth? Okay, that. You know what I mean? And this stuff's disappearing unless we make a note of it. I mean, everyone can go to the British Library, but how many people actually do? And I was going to ask that as a follow-on. Have you ever been there and looked through their comic archives? Have you?
I haven't. I was probably getting quite close to doing it before COVID kicked in. I would like to go because there are some things that I'd be reasonably interested in looking into. But I don't. I know that they have moved. I think they used to have their newspaper archive used to be in North London, and now it's moved out to somewhere in Wiltshire. Or something.
Oh right.
You can still access it, but you've just obviously got to be a lot more organised in terms of thinking. This bit. If I'm going, is it going to be in that place? In which case, I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't realise it. You bring back the memory now that it's moved out there. I heard someone say that recently, but it's not a bad thing to be British Libraries. I'm a member of the British Library, and they've got a great little restaurant you can use upstairs if you remember. Yeah. If you're waiting for a train, it's really nice.
So I've got there's one particular title, which is it's the Holton Press, who were the big company in the probably in the 30s and 40s. So they published Picture Post, which is like the British version of Life magazine. They put out Lilliput, Farmers Weekly, and eventually they've gone to publish Eagle. Associated titles. But in the end, they sort of had a few, glorious golden years in the 50s, thought, wow, we're the bee's knees, decided to build themselves a big office. Spent a bit too much money on the new office and got taken over by, a bigger company who just went, I think we can afford you now. You've spent too much money on that building. But I'd really like to look at their, I haven't got a copy and I don't think I'll ever find a copy of their internal staff magazine because I think there's some interesting stuff by people who worked on the original Eagle. So I thought, if I do nothing else, I'd like to go and I'd like to fish that out and go, I wonder what's in here. Because I don't know what's in there. There might be one copy, 10 copies, might be very small, might be very big. I don't know. I just know enough about it to know the title to think, why not get that out? But somebody Norman Boyd, who we met at the
Mark. Yeah, you introduced me to him at the Comic Mart. Yeah, he's a nice guy. Yeah.
So he goes there a lot. And, he's Frank Bellamy, the Thunderbirds artist. That's probably what most people remember him for, but he runs... a Frank Bellamy blog all about all different aspects of his life. And he uses the British Library as a means of looking at sort of the newspaper strip work. They're sort of spot illustrations that he was doing for newspapers sort of on his way up. Because, it was sort of with a lot of artists, you think, I know where that artist came from. They started in... So for Frank Bellamy, he didn't start on Thunderbirds. He did Dan Dare before that. But before that, what did he do? He did... this particular strip for Eagle. What did he do before he worked for Eagle? He worked for Swift. What did he do before Swift? Don't know. At some point, the trail goes cold. And so Norman, would use the British Library to actually say, here's his early sort of newspaper strip art, which people, won't have seen and would otherwise be lost. So, yeah,
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's good. I often sit and think occasionally, like, for example, Nobrow do a Christmas card and Avery Hill do a Christmas card, and it's normally done by one or two or three of their artists who are currently creating books for them, and there's just little things like that we just forget, don't we? And they'll be lost to the mists of time, and I always try and keep hold of them because there'll be like ones. I think one Christmas card was by Utkin who does a book for Nobrow, and he's so good, and I'm thinking, I'm going to put that aside because people will forget that that's part of his the work he did with Nobrow. And I'm sure Tilly Walden did a Christmas card for Avery Hill at some point. This sort of thing, you need to keep an eye on it,
Yeah. And things like that that are so ephemeral, that are just sort of marketing. Yeah, we printed 100 of those, sent them out in the post, that's it, they're gone. Nobody's seen them. The creators who get them probably think, I get a Christmas card from 2000 AD every year. It's not very interesting to me, but that's because you're inside it and you're in that world. Whereas to those of us who are outside that world, sort of enviously peering in, we think, wow, imagine getting a Christmas card from 2000 AD. That would be amazing.
One of the things you did recently, man, that I really liked and found like really brought back a few memories is you did the old convention booklet. So did you start at UCAC and go forwards from there? Is that right?
I think I started at UK. Yeah, basically I was for my summer holiday, I need like a big meaty, something I can put up on the blog for 2 weeks so I can just go on holiday and not worry about it.
Right, okay. Yeah,
so I thought, oh, actually, yeah, maybe the UK would be a good place to start. I mean, you know, those for anyone who's heard any of my other podcasts this week, then you'll have heard me.
Where else you been on this week, dude?
I can't name any of your rivals on this show.
Yeah, you're very popular, but, we know that.
So it was, I mean, you know, some of those convention programs, you know, they're like 120 pages long, those UK brochures, yeah. You know, A4.
They're great like, as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They're great, you know, 120 pages, and you go look through and go, oh, look, you know, it's just the talent involved, you know, in putting those, yeah. You know, things
jam
together.
Pieces in the middle of them and yeah. Stuff like that as well. And yeah. Another one you mentioned was there, I remember going to UCAC, and I can't remember whether it's 84, 85, or 86, and you got like a portfolio.
Oh yeah, 86 was it?
Yeah, and it was of, and it like Miller had done a Batman for it, and you got it in this little envelope with a little sort of bendy metal clasp on it, and you opened it, and it was all these like on pretty bad paper, but essentially prints by different artists. It, amazing. I've got the Batman ones framed in front of me.
Have you? Yeah. That was fantastic. So, you know, and then that inspired me to think, oh, actually, you know, I've got a few other programs here, you know, convention programs. But, you know, I knew I didn't like for something like, you know, BIX or, you know, Glasgow Comic Con. I was like, well, yeah. I know I don't have all of them, but that's okay. You know, I'll put these up as a, well, there's these two, you know, what else have I missed, people? And then, you know, Alan Henson, shout out to him because, you know, he was super helpful in terms of providing not only images for Scottish comic conventions, but also some of the artwork and sort of souvenirs that I covered on the blog as well. You know, they all came from him. So thanks to Alan for that. So, you know, I really enjoy being able to sort of say, you know, I've done that one. And you just, the list sort of keeps going. Because actually, you know, there's plenty of comics conventions to get your teeth.
And you often see them at comic marts and in, yeah. I think the shop in Putney's got a few in their magazine box of like, it might even be like San Diego. I bought a San Diego one the other day at a convention. It was at Glasgow when I went there last year. Right. I bought a couple of San Diego programs and stuff because, you know, it's just from, I don't know, 83 or something. I thought that's going to be cool to have. It's going to be a cool read.
Yeah. I mean, I love those, and I started getting those originally because so Frank Hampson, who was sort of the creator and the main artist on Dan Dare, you know, for that 10 years, that sort of, you know, he was an artist there, you know, that I loved, and I wanted to create everything that he'd drawn, brackets, but not a whole set of eagles, because, you know, my house can't cope with that many comics. So I had to find, you know, other things that he'd done. So, you know, and I knew he'd worked on these convention programs, and therefore I was like, oh, okay. Actually, you know, I think, you know, they won't take up, you know, 1,000 issues of Eagle or 500 issues of Eagle with him in. Like, oh, actually, that's quite a lot. But, you know, the three convention programs that he contributed to. No, you know, I think that's going to take up a lot less room.
They used to be quite good because you used to get, they would be printed for you when you arrived as part of your, when you got your ticket sort of thing. Yeah. And not only would they have all this marvellous art in there, but they'd also, if you bought a ticket in advance, you'd have your name in it as well.
Oh, yeah. The attendant, I can't remember, sort of the attendant. I can't remember how they described it, but it was sort of always the sort of the shout out to sort of the loyal, the faithful. You know,
and you can look through that and you can pick out people you know now. So I was looking through one the other day and said, oh, I see him about still. And it's like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So I did, I think for David Hathaway Price's fan scene, I think for issue one, I did a sort of my incomplete guide to UCAC and GCAC, which was the Glasgow Comic Art Convention.
Yeah.
And I think for a couple of those, I did include the sort of, you know, they used to love printing this sort of list of, you know, like you say, the people who bought those early birds tickets and yeah, you can go through that list and go either people who you know now or think, oh, at the time,
yeah,
you know, you're down as just you know somebody who's attending, but bloody hell, you know, you've gone on to become actually, you know, that famous comics creator. You know, you weren't at the time, but you are now. So yeah, I love looking through those lists.
How long did UCAC go on for?
It's about 10 years, maybe.
I think 85 is the first one, and then I think it goes on longer.
It actually sort of kind of peters out a bit, doesn't it? It goes into the early 90s at least, because I know that's the one we were at, Dan, wasn't it, when we saw Stan Lee turn up that time.
I only went to two.
Right.
Yeah.
I can remember by the covers. There's one where Punisher and Wolverine on the cover,
Right. Yes, I know the one. One of those
Gary Erskine cover, that one.
Yes.
And yeah. there's one, I think it's Martha Washington, and she's running from this giant, great big green robot, mech thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one as well.
98 is the last one, Woodrow Phoenix.
Oh, really? Cover. Okay. I didn't go to that one. Okay.
No, again, for anyone who's listened to any other podcast I've been on this week, I'm going to repeat this anecdote. But it's the 97 one. It's a lovely Frank Quitely illustration on the front cover, hard to get hold of because the cleaners came in on the Sunday morning when everybody was still, you know, lying in their bed hungover and slung out all the programs.
Oh, wow, okay.
Sold.
Yeah. Oh my God!
So, yeah, imagine, you know, you're sort of selling these at £7.50. You know, you've got to sell, you know, quite a lot of these to help you recoup your costs, and you get up the next morning, the cleaners have sung them all out. You wouldn't be very happy with this.
UK was great. I remember because I lived in London, I managed to get home most nights on the Saturday. But I remember one year, I think I was maybe 15 or something. I decided because you could either get a hotel or you could, which is obviously too expensive for a 15-year-old, or you had the option of watching the movies.
The all night film show.
So you could sit in the all night film show, and I think there was like Supergirl and a couple of other films showing, and I sat there and like tried to sleep in these uncomfortable chairs, you know, with my mate. It was
With Supergirl on, that's like the worst of the worst.
Helen Slater, though, she's pretty good.
Send you to sleep, though. Send you to sleep, though. You've misunderstood the purpose of this film night. It's
Dudley, Pete. It was Pete and Dud. It was Pete from Pete and Dud.
Oh, shit. Yeah, he's in it.
He's in it, isn't he?
Peter Cook.
Yeah, he's got quite a big role in it. And Faye Dunaway's in it and all sorts, isn't it?
It's weird because Faye Dunaway has like kind of like an eye on world domination. Then she just diverts for a large part of the film even to try and get in a bloke, which is really odd.
I'll just watch it again. I haven't seen it for years. Okay. Yeah,
doesn't hold up.
Oh, good stuff. And the other thing you moved into from convention booklets, you moved into sketchbooks, didn't you, Rich?
Yeah. Again, that seemed like a natural sort of link at the time because, you know, if you go to a convention and you're like me, then you're like, oh, you know, love to get a sketchbook, you know, little sort of, you know, if you can't, you know, often, you know, they're pretty reasonably priced, aren't they? You know, maybe, you know,
not always, but yeah, yeah. I did try and buy an Ernie Chan one once and I was quoted 70 quid and I'm like, what, for that little A5 thing? Really? Are we talking about the same thing? And he went, yeah. Okay, I think I'll leave it.
Yeah. Fucking hell.
Yeah, prices for you. 70 quid now. But but yeah, normally, you know, they're like a fiver, maybe something like a Gary Erskine. You know, it was, you know, his sketchbook that he sells the shows is like A4, it's full colour throughout. Yes. Mm. You know, it's got, you know, it's probably 40 or 50 pages, comes with a free poster. It's like, bloody hell, you know, this is so sketchbooks, you know, and again, they can be really ephemeral. So somebody like Graham Neil Reed, who's an artist who I really like, you know, he's worked on
a lot of sort of Doctor Who covers and stuff like that.
He's done a lot of Doctor Who. He's worked on 2000 AD a little bit. He's done some Commando covers.
Cool.
But he's put out sketchbooks for, you know, just for his local comic show, and he's like, I've printed 30 of these.
Yeah.
And that's it. So, you know, if you really, you know, you really want it, you know, you had to go to the show. You know, that was it.
Yeah.
If you didn't go to that show, you ain't gonna
get it.
Yeah, that Duncan Fegredo one I've got. That's a nice little one, that sort of thing. Right. You've done them, Vince and Dan, haven't you? I'm sure you've done one before.
I've done them. They were given away to essentially, I had that sketchbook. It was only a cheaply made thing, but if you bought Vanguard at the show, you got one of the sketchbooks.
That was the first one at Super Comic Con we did. You did that.
Yeah.
And I did a load of sketchbooks that I sort of launched at Thought Bubble sort of last year. I mean, I say sketchbooks. It wasn't like a yearly one. It was just one of those. I've got all of this artwork that I've done, or like a commission or something, put it all in a little book that if people want to pick it up, then they can pick it up.
I like that sort of thing because it's like you say, they're not too expensive generally. Yeah. And they're a nice, like, something you're not going to get by just going in your comic shop on a Wednesday and buying. And I kind of like that. It's a little bit of a,
I actually just forgot that I'd actually had one until you just mentioned it. Because there's kind of been, you know, because we haven't had any conventions
and
stuff.
No con action.
And that's probably the most recent sort of printed work that I've had at the moment. You know, apart from MI666, sorry, you know, a bit in terms of like just artwork and stuff. Yeah, I completely forgot about it. And I do have some available, so get in touch if you
want. Yeah. Still got send, some send me prints. A copy. You can be on the blog too.
Yeah, splendid. Yeah.
Because I think, you know, they are, you know, because they are so, you know, ephemeral, you know, they're just sort of, you know, you do it for that show, you know, you only print 20 or 30 off. Yeah. Then, you know, what, you know, if you couldn't go to that show, you wouldn't know that existed. So I might be looking at your Big Cartel shop thinking, oh, shall I buy that? You know, I think I've got everything that you've produced, but I've missed that because, yeah, you know, I wasn't able to go to the show.
Well,
so that was
I don't have a Big Cartel shop. So, you know, and I'm not shouting. I mean, I've just mentioned it that you can get it from me, but I'm not shouting every day, I've got this. So, you know, if you don't see me at a convention, you probably won't know that I've got it.
And it's a nice alternative. You go to someone's table and they've got, I don't know, someone like Steve Rude or someone, and they've got pages, and you're thinking, fucking hell, I'd love some Steve Rude. And you look at the pages and they're like 400 quid and you think, I can't afford that. Then you think, oh, I wouldn't mind a print. And you look at that and they're 50 quid. You think, I'll get a sketchbook.
You don't want to walk away from the table empty handed.
Yeah, I've just met Steve Rude. I've got to buy something. And it's a nice little, yeah.
Yeah. I love a sketchbook for all those reasons. And yeah, to just, you know, they're just gone. You know, if it weren't there and then, you just miss it. You'd never know it existed. And that's what I like. You know, it's about trying to find these things that you don't know that they exist.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, if you really like that artist, you know, and you really think, oh yeah, I've definitely, you know, I've got everything they've done. You know, I've backed every Kickstarter that they did a print or a postcard or, you know, whatever. And it's just, you know, it might be one of the things that crops up and you go, oh, hang on.
You can't say you're a proper fan until you've got everything.
There's a real joy in the discovery of things as well. And this isn't just nostalgia, because obviously, you know, whether it be sketchbooks or old comics or things like that, you know, obviously it's fun to go back and look at some of the comics that you got. But, you know, by going back, I've looked at when I was a kid, looking at some of these weekly books and stuff. And of course, I've gone, you know, people listening to the show know I've been to eBay, I've been to Comic Marks or whatever, and picked up old issues of Eagle and Battle, etc., for this one particular strip. But then on the old mega bus, no, it wasn't a mega bus, but on the bus home, I've picked up the issues and I've read strips that I didn't read when I was a kid, really. Do you know what I mean? The ones that were like, you know, I mean, because when I was a kid, I wasn't such a fan of, I mean, I know my brothers were, but I've forgotten his name. Eagle, it's the alien face one that
Doom Lord.
such a recognisable character, such a recognisable, like, the art in the strip is always recognisable. But that wasn't, you know, I didn't sort of rediscover that and, like, get a kick out of that until, like, now, when I, you know, over the past couple of years. So you never know, just by looking at the older books, what new favourites or new things that you'll like, you'll discover.
Yeah, it's definitely true. For me, you know, my equivalent of that would be The House of Damon. The New Eagle when it came out. And, you know, just, I mean, at the time I was like, I was probably 7 or something or 8. And I thought, oh, that looks a bit scary. You know, I'm not quite sure what's going on there, you know. And that was the Jose Ortiz artist, you know, art that, you know, that was, you know, absolutely fantastic, you know, very detailed and very like, oh, yeah, that is really what would happen. It's pretty scary. So I'm not going to read that. And it was only when it came out more recently, with David McDonald's reprint of it, that I, you know, it was that there it all is in one volume, in one go. And I read it, I was like, you know what, you know, this still really stands up. You know, this hasn't aged. The artwork is still, you know, gloriously black and white. You know, Jose Ortiz is, you know, you know, art is amazing. So yeah, you know, you can go back and think, oh yeah, I didn't used to read that, and I wonder, you know, why that is, and does it still work? Because some of them will, and some of them won't.
Some of them won't. Some things don't. They don't travel well through the years, do they? Whether it be whether it be the messaging, you know, the character creation, or anything. There are some things you look at now and just go, oh dear.
That's... Well, unlike Paddy McGinty's goat, which is obviously, you know, bang up to date.
I'm discovering reprints a lot more though now, especially like certainly with
Thank
the UK
God
stuff, like Death Wish and Turbo Jones and stuff, which I've talked about on the show. Yep. Just reading those. I mean, as a reader, it's nice for me to look at them and be able to pick them up from a bookstore or wherever you get your books. You know, those sort of things. I mean, I'd like to think that the original creators that are involved with them are obviously getting a high five or something from it. Maybe I'm naive, but but you know, but from a purely selfish reader's point of view, it's in a good, you know, we're now seeing. I mean, I know Tony, you the 13th Floor, which is a book I need to get.
I bought that last week. Brilliant.
And stuff like that's great. And what was the other one from Wildcat? Loner. That's another one that's
Loner.
Yeah, Wildcat, which is a title that not so many people forget about that. And that that was an absolute banger. That one, twelve issues.
Only,
and prices for that go for quite a pretty penny, don't they? Because it was a short, short run. I think only 12 issues before it was swallowed by the Eagle, which everything gets swallowed by.
In the
Yeah, they had a few on the shelf at Orbital, didn't they, for a while, Rich? I remember seeing a few there. Who was doing the covers for them? There was someone.
You had
Ian. Was it Kennedy? Kennedy, yeah. I was going to say Kennedy
did a few. Yeah, there's some lovely.
Kennedy, some Vanyo covers. Kennedy covers. I mean, the caliber of the artists they got involved in that. I mean, I know, like, you know, Barry Tomlinson, who you've had on the show. You know, he's really, he is mad about, you know, Wildcat. You know, he thinks, you know, it was absolutely, you know, sort of the high water, or, you know, not high watermark, you know, but, you know, fantastic creators on it, you know, and it really.
There's a Steve Pugh cover, I believe.
Oh, right.
That you posted on your blog, of like an alien beast that was. I remember when you were a kid and you're seeing these sort of things. And these things do imprint on your mind, you know, the way a creature looks. And there's a certain Wildcat cover. You know, sometimes, I don't know why, in the subconscious, sometimes when I'm just doodling an alien monster or something, it is that beast. Do you know what I mean? Realise it until you look at it again and go, shit, I've been copying that for years.
Those Wildcat covers reminded me of the strangeness that you used to see when you saw a Ballard Nelly and you go, it's a bit weird. It's not quite. Yeah, what's that about? You know? Yeah. And they were attention grabbing, weren't they?
But it is, it's a great series. I mean, it's one of those ones that I just like to. Have the 12 issues, but probably
it is a bit of an. It's becoming, sadly, Rich, a bit of a niche area for collecting, isn't it? The British comic scene, and we got people. I mean, not everyone knows that somebody like Hibernia Press or someone like that are putting out some interesting stuff, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, they, you know, not only do they do, you know, Hibernia Press, not only have they done, you know, interesting reprints, you know, but Dave is doing, you know, original research. As
I've got that book about Scream that, you know, fantastic.
Good.
Like, you know, I mean, obviously I was intrigued by Scream, read the, and when you read these things, how well researched these books are, you're like, bloody hell, stuff that was going on at the time. It's fascinating reading.
It really is, isn't it?
He's put out a new one recently, didn't they? Fantastic Adventures, I think it's called.
I saw that on their blog,
Which is about, it was a David Lloyd idea that I think he took to Fleetway as a, you know, a bit of a, right, you know, this is, you know, I think we could do this, and, you know, this title with this artist, this title with this artist, this title with this artist. And it got quite a long way through, you know, they sort of made up a dummy of it, of what it was going to be. And then for whatever reason, you know, it never sort of panned out. So this title, Fantastic Adventure, that David's just put out, has got all sorts of other nearly comics, if you know what I mean, you know, things that are like, that got as far, again, like as the dummy stage, you know, maybe they've got a professionally dummy, they've maybe, you know, circulated it to the trade to sort of say, you know, what about this? You know, would you buy this? Would you buy this? But then it didn't quite work out. And some of those strips then get recycled into other, comics later on down the line, you know, because once Fleetway had bought something, you know, they didn't like to, you know, we're going to just throw it away, you know, it had to get printed somewhere. anything that Hibernia put out, you know, I'll buy that, because, you know, the quality of research is fantastic. They've got some more titles coming out. I'm not sure. I don't want to say when, not because I know, but because I don't want to get it wrong and have people. But they've got a little reprint license with Rebellion. So, you know, they can publish, you know, maybe strips that Rebellion wouldn't. Wouldn't come out under the imprint of the Treasury of British Comics either, because you think, well, we can't sell 1,000 copies of that, or, you know, whatever their break even is.
Yeah.
But see, David, you think, well, I could sell you know, whatever it is, you know, 200, 300.
Yeah, he's
know,
sort of print, like I'm suspect he's print on demand and that sort of thing, is he? Is that yeah, so the sort of model? Can, yeah.
If he can do that, you know, it's like, well, it's never going to get published by the Treasury, but, you know, but if David can do it to a, you know, a smaller audience, then, you know, the fact that they're happy to do that, you know, is fantastic, because it's just a title or a strip, maybe, you know, they're just never going to get to, or it's just the creators involved are not quite, you know, who they want. So yeah, no, they've got, he's got plenty more stuff coming out. So yeah, so
I always keep an eye on that. Yeah, yeah. I follow him on Facebook and Instagram and a couple other things. Yeah, no, good stuff.
All right then, here's a question. Yeah. So slightly off topic, but obviously you got into your Dan Dares, I'm guessing, Rich. That was that was a popular character. Which one is your Dan Dare? Because I'm guessing, did you start reading when it was the Roy of the Rovers star Dan Dare, you know, that the Flash Gordon blonde hair action hero, or was it when they, and I remember when I was a kid, it was actually quite a big deal when they went back to the 50s sort of style Dan Dare. They made a huge deal out of it when he came back. Yeah. Which one is your Dan? Not you, Butcher.
I started reading New Eagle in 1983. So Ian Kennedy is drawing Dan Dare at that stage. You know, those covers that are just just amazing. So you know that was what, you know, hooked me in. And then, you know, I could go back from there to go, oh, you know, but who is this other Dan Dare guy? I would say, you know, the original, drawn by Frank Hampson. You know, Frank Hampson is my favorite artist. And I just, you know, the sort of the character creation, the world building that went on, you know, to create that strip around, you know, the number of artists they had involved. You know, it's not, although it's, you know, it's Frank Hampson, you know, there are a number of other artists who, you know, maybe bring a specialism to that page. You know, so you'd have multiple artists potentially producing, you know, the page, you know, people, you know, who were specialists in maybe airbrushes or use of airbrush or spaceships, you know, would draw potentially, you know, a part of a frame or, you know, a whole frame, and then somebody else would draw the next frame. But the research that went into it, and the sort of the background material that they would prepare to explain to themselves, you know, how, you know, just, you know, maybe like a alien troop transporter would work. You know, how does this troop transporter work? You know, what do these aliens look like? Why do they look like this? What does their uniform mean? And that was so that then when it, you know, somebody else was drawing it, you know, they like, right, what am I drawing? I've got to draw one of these, right, hang on, go to the research book, you know, reference book. Oh, yeah. Right, hang on, it's a sort of, he's supposed to be a colonel or a general, so he's, you know, he'll be a bit taller than the others, and he's got a triangle on his head. Right, there we go, that's how we know. So that's, you know, that, you know, combined with, you know, his amazing artistic talent, means that's the original Dan Dare, you know, when drawn by Frank Hampson, is, you know, is my favourite. But Ian Kennedy, pretty close.
Is it sacrilege to be into the newer versions, I suppose? Do you just sort of spit on people when you hear that they like...
I think I'm going to hang up now.
It isn't something you hear, though, does it? Like, whenever people talk about Dan Dare, you know, that 80s style, you know, that later one just isn't mentioned. It's always, you know, we think of the, you know, the classic sort of look now, you know, the sort of almost the Spitfire pilot kind of, the, you know, the Royal Air Force kind of pilot version.
Yeah. So there's been loads of attempts to revamp him. What was the one? Was the one in Blast magazine? What was the one?
Revolver. Grant Revolver. Morrison, that's Ryan Hughes in Revolver. So I guess my answer to that is, for me, you know, Dan Dare, you know, his character, you know, he's always been evolving and changing, because lots of people, you know, so I was reading like the early 80s version, you know, then I read the 90s version in Revolver, and it was only although I was collecting...
Virgin Comics had a version of him, didn't they?
Yeah.
Was it Garth Ennis
did it, and it was it was a slightly grittier sort of version, wasn't it, I think, that one?
Yeah,
Gary Erskine, I think, does the art for that, isn't he? And then there was another series even more recently than that, but that was only sort of four issue. You know, there's a sort of, there's a law of diminishing returns around the, you know, how long each series is becoming, and it's, you know, it's diminishing pretty quickly. So, you know, for me, you know, I've always seen him in different ways. So because I've seen him in different guises and different formats, you know, it's not been such a problem for me. And it was only really, although I was collecting back issues of 2000 AD that had Dan Dare in them, because, you know, I always had gaps in my collection. You know, I could never read the whole story.
Dave Gibbons and Ballard Nelly. Did anyone else draw it in 2008?
Gary Leach draws a little bit.
Oh, okay. Right.
And Brian Bolland contributes a few frames 1 week.
right, okay, cool.
So, yeah, but, you know, I mean, I think he's credited, which, you know, is he credited on the front cover? I mean, he's credited, and then you sort of go through and you look at it, and it's like, he's done three frames in this book. I'm not having to go at Brian, you know, he's very talented. So, yeah, but it was only when I read that that I read, you know, that I read a lot of the, what do they call it on Space Spinner 2000? Battle Action Playset, Dan Dare. You know, and they're right, you know, that, wow, that's Space War. Oh, you know, that would be, you know, that, you know, that would be a great sort of Action Force set, or you know, I'd love a big space fort like that. You know, that could really take on the Millennium Falcon in my imagination.
Right.
I hadn't realised how I was like, oh yeah, this is the bit where you blow up a planet with, you know, not like an empty planet, you know, a boring planet. You know, it's like, oh, but there are people on the planet. Doesn't matter. We're going to nuke it anyway. Like, you know, Fox is always on there going, look, you know, is this guy, you know, is this genocide? You know, what, you know, is he a war criminal? You know, what
blank it out. Blank it out.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, that to me is interesting, you know, of itself, that, you know, people, there must be a universal idea and concept in there that, you know, people want to buy into, you know, because he keeps coming back and back and back. And, you know, that was what was, you know, captured perfectly, you know, by Hampson and the others, you know, that sort of probably, you know, the sort of that golden age of the strip, you know, particularly, you know, from the mid 50s to the end of, you know, 59. And then, you know, ever since then, you know, it's people trying to, you know, catch that genie in a bottle.
Yeah. And he is like one of the major sort of UK action characters, isn't he? I mean, people always think about Judge Dredd normally, but I think, you know, there was a time when Dan Dare was standing toe-to-toe.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you did a survey of, you know, what comic characters do you know, it's going to be quite a short list, you know, of people in the street, you know, who would you know? You have to be around for a long time to get enough cultural buying, or whatever the phrase is, you know, that people will go, if someone writes, oh, that's a real Roy of the Rovers moment, everybody knows what you mean. You haven't written, you know, he scored a, you know, a screamer of a goal in the last minute. You've just written that was a real Roy of the Rovers moment to win it, and people go, I know what that means. You don't need to translate it, you know. And there aren't many characters like that that would have that buying that people, I'm not sure what a Judge Dredd moment would be, but you know what I mean, you know, that people would have that
probably just shooting someone mercilessly in the street.
Let's leave politics out of this, but you know that, you know, who do people know? Yeah, you know, they're sort of, you know, you would still, even for something like you know, people would say, oh, it's the real Boys Own moment. I mean when was Boys Own last
year?
You know, like, not quite 100 years ago, but it's not too far off. But people still understand what you mean when you say that, you know. So Boys Own, weirdly, you know, is a thing that still lives on people's memories. Dan Dare, Roy the Rovers. I mean, I think people would recognise Judge Dredd, you know, because of the movies as well. So, you know, he has that advantage. So, you know, people buy into that. But beyond that, you know, it's, you know, you get down to sort of newspaper strips quite quickly. You know, people know who Garfield is.
They're like George and Lynn. You'd know what that meant initially when you were talking about it straight away. When you talk about a couple, that couple are just like George and Lynn. In other words, they're naked all the time and shagging.
But I've got a George and Lynn book, actually. There's not many reprint volumes of George and Lynn, surprisingly. Why aren't they? You know, it was like, if you could have a Parrish's book every year, you'd have a Giles book every year. why are there only two George and Lynn reprint volumes? I find it very peculiar. So
I'm not sure what I'd think if I came around and saw George and Lynn, the coffee table book.
Maybe the sort of people who'd have pampas grass outside, wouldn't they? And we all know what that's a sign for.
Oh, my word.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of these books that, you know, some of our younger listeners may not know about like these titles of these characters, and they are great. You know, there's some great stuff out there. Great, you know, that like say a lot of these characters that maybe you've read in some of your larger books have been hugely influenced by.
I mean, sometimes you find, you know, creators. So Kieran Gillen, you know, The Wicked and the Divine. You know, he's a big name creator now. Yeah, and one day, you know, casually indexing my early noughties Warhammer comics. Good times. you know, you get to about issue 78, and it's like by Kieran Gillen, and you're like, oh. It's quite an unusual name, isn't it? You know, there's not many other people, you know.
Once the other one was in Doctor Who.
My favourite Kieran Gillen is the one in Doctor Who, I have to say.
The ginger one, not the bald one. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, that must be him. And you know, you go to like the Wikipedia page, it's like, you know, long time video games journalist, then segued into comics, you know, and then wrote these famous comics. And you're like, okay. But again, you know, there's a moment where you step over and you go, right. You know, where is that? Where's that moment where that happened? And it, you know, and it's when you find that, you know, and I put that up as a piece on the blog, you know, and Kieran spotted it and was like, yeah, you know, you're right. You know, that's the first piece of sort of comics writing that I did was in, you know, Warhammer Comics.
And certainly for a first thing, that's a hell of a thing to do, because you don't jump into that without knowing that's not just writing some, you know, a puff piece, if you could say it that in comics. But to write something like Warhammer, I mean, I don't know it so much, but if you've got to know it to write it, haven't you?
So, you know, so sometimes, you know, you find, you know for all the comics and the fanzines I'm looking at, often it's, you know, it's somebody, you know, either, you know, before they were famous. So it's like, oh, you know, if you like this artist, you know, you may not have seen this strip before, you know, like some of, you know, if you think you've read all Dave Gibbons sequential art, you know, because you've read Watchmen, it's like, well, actually, and it's a piece I haven't written, but I'd like to. It's like, well, actually, if we go back through, you know, his contributions,
you know, everyone started somewhere,
you know, there are strips in there that he's drawing, and it's there are these things as well. You know, you just got to keep pushing back and back and back to see, you know, how far you can get. So this is when they actually start. This is when they, you know, they enter the medium. Yeah. Not just, you know, they didn't just become famous. There were all these stepping stones to get across.
I always have to take a deep breath when I read a Watchmen article, especially more modern ones. Here we go again.
I think we almost need to stop fixating on Watchmen, don't we?
Yeah.
I think people perhaps need to move on a little bit.
Please.
Oh dear. But you know, before we move on, I mean, look, this is Richard's going to come back, because we could talk about this wonderful history and culture of UK comics. And yes, there's been the ups and downs, there's been the light, there's been the highlights, and there's been the dark moments. So we've only just started on this, and we didn't get into a 3-hour conversation about Stormforce, so that will be coming
still time
in the future. But I mean, obviously, you are well knowledgeable, and I need to pick your brains about Vanyo, Richard, because you know there's something. I've got a little idea in my head, you know, just a little idea for something that I want to develop, maybe one day in the future. So I'll be getting in touch anyway, and sending you a sketchbook, which is available now if you DM me whenever you want one. No, but this is awesome, and you should definitely check out Richard's blog, which will it's just thoroughly.
Yeah, I look at it every day. Yeah, it's great.
Pointed loads of people at it when they'd have the question or tagged Richard in on Twitter.
And
I think every time you've known. Every time.
I asked him a question 5 minutes before I pressed record on an episode of a podcast with Dave Robertson, and you came back straight away with an answer. Thank you.
And also, you know, we can say that, I mean, it's a couple of years ago, but we can say now on air, thank you very much for doing the raffle at episode 200.
That's fantastic. Dave.
Great stuff.
It was a pleasure to and thank you to everyone who bought tickets there and then. You know, we raised a lot of money for Little Heroes, and continue to try and support Aaron, in whatever I can. Shout out to Dave Broughton, you know, who has, you know, a number of times in the past given of his time and his services for free to support Aaron in his work.
Yeah, I've done some work. Brilliant, nice one. Yeah. And he's been on the show a couple of times, Dave, hasn't he?
I think virtually everyone went home with something on that day. Yeah. There were so many prizes. Yeah.
Even two mates who know nothing about comics who sort of rolled in drunk to the my two mates, even they got a prize. They were well chuffed. Yeah.
Hey, nice one.
Yeah. And now that you've done that, unfortunately, Richard, you're stuck with us.
Yeah.
So, you know,
even though he goes another podcast, apparently this is the rumor I'm hearing.
Yeah, for shame. The Judas. No other podcasts are available. yes, you're the Judas, Tony. You know that
Judas cast.
I have to say, I got into podcasts, yours and maybe other people's, when I had a ridiculous gardening injury.
you're so middle class.
and essentially couldn't open my eyes for a week.
Do you want to talk about this? Because you know you can't bring that up without one of us asking what happened.
This could be like
it was in the Triffids. Is that what that happened?
Yeah. Are you a pod person? Were you waiting to come out of your cocoon? Is that what it was?
Question of sport. All the three of us take a guess of what happens.
All right, I'm saying. I'm saying he's
Vince, you're first.
He's a pod person.
It was a dogging it. No. It was. He went to spray weed killer, but had it the wrong way around.
Oh, I was going to do that one.
Fell
face first into a lawnmower that was on. I got nothing else. Yeah. Richard, what happened?
Those are all a lot more action orientated and much better reasons for I'm never a week off work than I was cutting some grass is not quite a strong enough word, you know, some long grass in the garden, and it just sort of twanged back and hit me in the eye because I wasn't wearing safety spectacles because I don't wear glasses. And it just smacked me in the eye. Oh. And that was like on the Sunday. And by the Monday morning, I was like, I can't open my eyes. It hurts so much. So I had to have a week off work with this ridiculous middle-class injury. and you very kindly, Tony, let my post through that I put on the awesome page saying, help. I'm off work for a week. I've already listened to the show, you know, on a Monday morning, you know, like I've already listened to it. What else could I listen to? And people very generously said, oh, well, if you like, I like that and that and that. And, you know, that's when my interest in podcasts and shows began was that ridiculous week.
Yeah, and it's the old commute that we're missing out on, Rich, isn't it?
Yeah.
Commute is when I listen to all my podcasts.
Yeah, same.
I know your commute. Rich revealed to me he's got a very exciting commute because his bus goes past somewhere where was it? Who used to live there? Or some
I could have from the end of my road got the bus to Frank Bellamy's house.
There you go. I knew something like that.
Yeah. It would take me 10 minutes to get to Frank. If he only hadn't died in 1973, you know.
Yeah. Oh my God,
he could still be here. You know, he's a bus route. Young,
that counts. Let's go there anyway. Yeah.
I've already taken photos.
Telephoto lens.
Oh, God. Anyway, this has been... check out Rich's website, which is hugely entertaining and fascinating. Yes. We'll put a link in the show notes. And, he's sticking with us for the rest of the show. You've got to stick around, Richard. You can't go anywhere. You're not gardening now, so you can't get out of it. Although we're glad you're all right. We're glad you're back. And
that's sort of counterintuitive, hoping we get a lot of blind people listening to us because they can't then go and buy the comics, can they, I suppose?
Oh, God. Yeah, we've got to be careful.
Yeah.
Anyway, do we have any shout-outs this week, gents?
Got a few. Yeah, so thanks to Alex at Strange Apparitions for hosting me and Falpy. We went and did a lot. We signed some comics for him and bought far too much at his shop, which is a great little shop. If you go to @strangeapparitionsshop on Instagram, he also gave me a comic he's made, and it's called I Was a Teenage Swipe Bag, which is brilliant. It looks very Klausian, but well worth a look. So go to Strange Apparitions for all your comic needs.
Also, congratulations to our pal Martin Simmons for his amazing pre-order numbers on Department of Truth.
Wow,
he's got over 100k pre-orders. Now, I'm going to say that is completely and utterly down to us for pimping the book. But no, it's not really. But yeah, and rightly so. It's an amazing book. I absolutely love it. You guys have seen it now, haven't you?
It's just amazing.
Saw some pages from Knights versus Pirates today. Mr. Imber emailed me through some preview copies, and it is fucking as good as we expected. If you missed out on the Kickstart, which you may have done, you can go to if you go to @Reckless Hero HQ on Twitter, you can find it. It's a link to an Indiegogo on demand shop. So what Indiegogo does, Indiegogo also provides a place you can just go and buy something once a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo has ended. So you can go and do that. It's indiegogo.com/projects/knights-vs/pirates. So indiegogo.com/projects/knights-vs/pirates, and you can find it there, and it's worth getting. So yeah, I can't imagine it's going to be that long before it gets released, actually. It looks pretty much done to me. Yeah.
We were talking earlier about Kickstarters. I've been hit with the, you know, you back Kickstarters, and I think like three or four came out this week, on consecutive days. I thought, fucking hell.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
I'm having to put, and we love all the people, all you lovely people who are putting out Kickstarters soon. I'm having to draw a line under it because I looked at how many I just backed and how much money I've just had to cough up.
So that is the problem with Kickstarters. You kind of have to imagine how much money you'll have in a month.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. And of course, I was doing the silly thing like, oh, yes, I'll have the hardcover of that. So I've got to stop. But just know that I still love you all.
So it's not as much.
You have a Kickstarter ending like near payday, so people will put in on it.
But people's payday fall differently, don't they? I mean, I have one payday on the 6th and one payday on the 20th. So it's kind of different for me.
Okay.
Jesus. I know. Is it normally the end
of
the month?
Paydays. Jesus Christ. Well,
I think if you put it at the end, sort of end of the month, end of the first week, you might cash a lot of people.
Yeah.
I think you'd be right. Yeah.
Is that when you get your paper round money, Tony?
It's the methamphetamine dealing.
Oh, yeah, cool. Well, you know.
Do you deliver the free papers and then just sort of dump them over the railway side?
Obviously, there's a chance of sexy times, you know, going to knock on the door.
Oh, God.
That's why it takes him better part of a week to deliver 300 papers.
Oh, God. Is there any more shout-outs?
Two quick ones. I've appeared on the Art92 podcast with the VHS cover art discussion with Damien and Luke Copsey. So keep an eye out for that when it drops. And a quick shout out to Samuel George London's The S Factor, which launched on Comixology this Wednesday.
Four issues
all four issues.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I'll quickly read out the blurb. Unappreciated psychic called Grey Fox decides to rebrand himself through a new dating reality TV show for superheroes called The S Factor, where 12 female contestants fight for his affection. Meanwhile, his former superior, Dark Fox, is bewildered as to why he put himself in such a vulnerable position. So you can buy all four issues on Comixology. Go for it.
Good stuff.
Nice. Rich, did you have a shout-out?
I did, yeah. Just a shout-out for a small press creator, Colin Maxwell, who's put out a couple of titles, Flight of the Eagle and Raid on the Fourth, sort of war stories set around interesting stories that happened around his bit of Scotland. His first issue of Commando that he's written is coming out on October the 1st, issue 5371. He's segued that comic writing.
5371.
I know. Fuck you, Avengers. Yeah. Look at those numbers.
God. Bloody hell. Brilliant. I guess without further ado, it's time to talk about some more comics and art and things to check out this week, of which we've got a couple. The guest is going to go first now. So, Richard, what would you like to recommend to our lovely people?
My recommend is from a friend of the show and previous guest, David Hathaway Price. He's got issue 6 of his love letter to British comics, which is called Fan Scene. So yeah. FANSCENE. So it's not a fanzine, it's a fan scene. So this is, like I say, this is issue 6 that he's put out.
He's rattling through them, isn't he? I wrote for 1 and 2 and thought, oh, I better try and write for 3. And then he's on 6.
Yeah. And they are big books. They're
great, man. They're really good. Yeah.
So the new one, he's just put out the beta version and then done all 35 corrections that I sent him. Not because he got 35 things wrong, so I changed my mind on 35 things since I submitted it. this is like 125 pages, a little bit more, I think. Normally, you know, not only he puts it out as a free PDF, but, you know, if you want to read it as a, you know, a physical copy, you know, there's then he's found a really good publisher who Art Ith Marik, slightly odd name. But they'll do you, you know, it comes out, you know, it's full
they follow us on Twitter, actually. Okay. Yeah.
15-20 quid, but it's always full color, you know, the way David puts it together, you know, it's so professional, you know, it looks fantastic. Yeah, he's got lots of things about he tries to sort of tie in with particular anniversaries or, you know, things that are current. So it's 2020 is the 70th anniversary of the original Eagle. So I've got some articles in there about different aspects of that, including looking at an artist sketchbook that nobody will ever have seen before. So hopefully that's of interest if you like that sort of thing. And plenty of stuff about Conan, I think, as well.
Nice.
So a great variety of stuff. And like I say, you know, he puts out the PDF for free. So it's, you know, it's at no cost to anybody to look at. You know, people have given their time just to help David put this together, and you know, it's fantastic the amount of work that people have put into it and that he puts into it to get it produced and out there. So David Hathaway Price, issue 6 of Fan Scene.
Cool, nice one. Wow. Who wants to go next? D-Man?
Yeah, go for it. Okay.
What I recommend. I've actually been not reading too many comics this week. I've been trying to work on getting my art skills up. So I've been online and looking at Procreate videos. So I have to drop in a few of the links into the show notes rather than actually show the ones. But I've been posting a few bits of artwork in the group about trying to put speed lines in my work.
Okay.
And using like some drawing grids and stuff on Procreate, I've been buggering around with them and trying to get like the speed lines and speed effects going. And I've got the cat trying to eat the earphones as I'm trying to record. It's highly distracting. Stop doing that, please. that's Love been it. Fun. It's frustrating because you're kind of producing the Vanguard pages all the time and don't get line time to stop and try and improve what I'm doing. I'm just creating. I guess for you, like, so you're writing scripts, do you ever get the time to sort of like, rather than write another script, I'll take a bit of time and
I never get time to actually do a bit of creative writing that isn't something that I've got to write for an artist. Yeah, I know what you mean. Sometimes we've got to do that, haven't we, I suppose?
You have to, yeah, because sometimes you have to pull back and think, right, I need to self-reflect and where are my strengths and weaknesses and work on them. But that's what I've been doing.
Cool. Nice one. V, do you want to go?
Okay, I've got two sort of short ones, really. First up, Kickstarter reward, speaking of Kickstarters. And there seemed to be a Russell Mark Olsen day
I've not had mine yet. Yeah,
earlier this week, as a lot of people were starting to receive their books.
That's become the new thing, isn't it? It's like the day that it arrives.
Yeah,
it's almost become a part of the event now, isn't it?
Yeah. And of course, this was receiving Ditch Angels, Paper Noir Volume 1 by Russell Mark Olsen, introduction by Nicholas Pillai. I hope I got that right. Just quite simply, it is a collection of 48 illustrations depicting scenes from non-existent film noir from the drawing board of cartoonist Russell Mark Olsen. It's an art book, wonderfully put together. Obviously, there's very much thought about the design of it. I mean, I know he was... Russell always posts up like his bits of artwork. Anyone who saw the Kickstarter page knows that they could pledge and get original pieces, of which I got an original piece.
Which page did you get?
I got Heavy Pressure, which was marker and pencil on paper. It's opposite one called The New Client. It's like it's a figure sort of like up to his chest in water, surrounded by pipes and things like that. So yeah. So I have just since bought a couple of A5 frames to so I can put it up on the wall. So I'll probably do that.
Nice.
But yeah, he also I mean, the joke sometimes is that the floating heads of comics, the classic floating heads, you know. some artists, in fact, there was a 90s artist that we talked about, I think, on the last show.
Yeah, it was.
Who sometimes does floating heads because they can't think of anything else to do. But Russell's got this wonderful page by the introduction, wonderfully designed. It's got like blue tones and everything of lots of different noir sort of head characters, and I absolutely love it. It's amazing. It looks like the beginnings of an epic wallpaper. I'm sure he only designed those heads you can see, but I feel like there's 150 more that we can't see. Yeah, so this book is, you know, lots of black and white illustrations, some lovely blue tones, very much in the noir sort of feel. The pieces themselves range from ink and wash to sort of like, you know, marker and pencil, all black and white. He's come up with original fake names for films. You know, these look like films from the 1920s, 30s, 40s that, you know, the way he's done them, this looks like a snapshot of a film that doesn't exist. And I love that. I love that idea, you know, even taking it to the point of coming up with the titles. Because there's so much in a title as well, isn't there? When you see those old movie posters that are called, like, you know, the Red Claw or something like that, and you see, like, I don't know, Bela Lugosi or something on the poster, and you just think, what on earth is that about? And you can do that with a snapshot of like, the film itself. And Russell, he's got noir just pumping through his veins, and we know how much he loves it with the likes of Gateway City and stuff. And this is just a lovely little art book. Lovely little art book. I know some people. I got the soft cover. There's some people out there, and Tony's one of them.
I think I'm waiting for the hardcover. Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for.
There's a hardcover one as well.
Yeah, my hardcover copy and art has arrived. So.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which one did you get?
Nice one.
I got the one that's on the front cover.
Oh,
nice.
Wow.
Okay.
Oh, nice. And it was a great Kickstarter campaign anyway, the way he sort of laid it out. You could get the book and you could pick your art, and the way, you know, it's very clear and concise, and, you know, very, very deserved success of the Kickstarter, and a great little art book. Which was doing the rounds, and it was lovely to see. So, yeah, obviously follow Russell on Twitter and social media, and you can go to russellmarkolson.co.uk. To find out more. He's obviously one of the Skrull Lords, so expect to hear a bit more about.
Oh, that must be soon. I bet that's anytime soon, too. Yeah.
As they take over the world. So definitely Ditch Angels. Volume 1 is always good because it means that he's probably going to do something like this again in the future. And just quickly, I read the final issue of issue 3 of Grit from Scout Comics. Writer Brian Wickman. Illustrator Kevin Castianero, colorist Simon Goff, letterer Misha Myers. And this is it was just a great sort of action-packed little fantasy series that I hope to see more of. It didn't end how I thought it was going to end. It ended kind of suddenly, but thinking back on it narratively, it makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah, and, you know, there was a monster made of blood which made an appearance. It finished it, but like I say, I think he's... I know it's been looking at sort of Brian's Twitter and stuff. Thankfully, like, the orders have been good for this, and like they've sold out of printings of issues 1 and 2 and things like that. So, you know, Scout Comics, obviously, they're making a bit of a name for themselves. So I hope to see more of this sort of stuff. And I'm a big fan of Brian's writing. So, you know, if this isn't out yet, I think it's just about around the corner. So stay tuned for whenever this turns out. And I think there's a lot of sort of fantasy fans who like this sort of stuff. Castianero as well, he's a beast of an artist. I think there's a certain sort of action and pacing of his artwork which brings to mind the likes of, you know, your Daniel Warren Johnsons, or who did Southern Bastards?
Jason Latour.
Yeah, there's certain sort of character and sort of looks and style. It's yeah This is a lovely book, full colour, and there's a horrible beastie made entirely of blood and gore, which is really fucking cool. So Grit number 3, yeah, check it out. It's one of those. I was looking forward to the series, and I ended too soon. Hopefully we'll have more. We shall see. We shall see. So, Tony.
Cool. So, yeah, last one. I got an email this week from someone, and I didn't recognise the email. And it's someone who uses an email that they don't have their name as the title of it. You know, you see that occasionally, don't you?
Yeah.
And and the title of it was Your Hat, Hard Man to Find. And I thought, oh, fuck me, what's happening?
There you go.
They finally found me, haven't they? And it wasn't. It was Elizabeth Querstritt, fortunately. So it wasn't. It wasn't a drama. It was our buddy. This is called My Grief. Now, I was initially quite wary of it because it is, as she said in her email to me, she hates to be a cliche, but this is another lockdown quarantine comic, and I'm almost reaching. I'm not quite there yet, or not quite, but I'm reaching saturation point with quarantine comics. But this is done by Elizabeth, who we know is like nobody else that we know, I think is the phrase I'm going to use. So anyone who's interacted with Elizabeth knows how hilarious she is and how sort of idiosyncratic and funny. And she has a sort of a real energy about her. And she is the main person who would spring to mind who writes a lot about herself, I think. I think she did a book about her holiday, and she did a book about walking a dog and stuff like that. And there's a poignancy, but also a real humour to what she does. Like, for example, I had a table next to her at Hackney and last year, and every time she wanted to speak to me, she put her hand in the air. You know, I'm like, why have you got your hand in the air? And she goes, I want to ask you a question. I said, well, okay, go ahead. And then it's sort of this joke continued for the weekend. You know, it's like one of those sort of jokes. This is a mixture of black and white. It has some colour in it as well, the odd page. But it's a mixture of sort of scratches, doodles, art, comics and prose, all in the one 68-page book. It starts with, on Friday the 13th of March 2020, I left the office with the intention to work from home for 2 weeks. I took my desk plant with me. And this desk plant makes appearances at various points in the narrative. So rather than being a book where people in the middle of lockdown went, oh, we could do something where, you know, the world's taken over by, you know, whatever, she actually documents lockdown from the very beginning, which I think is an interesting approach. Perhaps we didn't expect that at the time.
No.
It's a weird one, isn't it, this lockdown thing? Because it's something that took over our lives reasonably recently. But do you remember when we first got locked in and we couldn't leave the house and we were allowed to go out for 5 minutes a day for a walk or something? Do you remember those days? And it just seems so long ago, but so near, so recently.
Yes, odd, very odd period.
Yeah, and we would all watch the daily briefing and ask each other how we were and how long it would last, and everyone suddenly started getting into having Zoom accounts or on Skype. And
I didn't realize those first couple of weeks where I was really kind of generally quite put out by it.
Yeah,
it's the new normal now, but yeah.
Yeah, it's strange, isn't it? It's you're right though. It's weird, and I genuinely think it's one of those things that people are going to talk about as if they talked about we are at war, because it's such a striking impact on everyone, isn't it? It's something that everyone has in common. We've all been through it together. And she sets about to do. Elizabeth sets about to do some sort of small accomplishments of looking or getting some art done. And she did what we did. I did it with you, Vince. We went for a walk as a sort of, it's almost, our walks became rituals back then. Do you remember
when
we would almost have a walk to sort of de-stress?
Yeah.
And you would see families out on their daily walk, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we'd see that, yeah.
Yeah, and you'd sort of pause to take in a bit of nature, and we all become a bit more acquainted with that. She also documents she fakes some Twitter accounts and shows on the pages, like Twitter accounts from people like Generic Annoyed Person, or Angry Human, or Despair Dude, and stuff like that. She does do a little bit of napping. She likes to have a nap. And our emotions kind of shifted, didn't they? We it was a bit of a, well, I'm kind of enjoying this privacy. I'm kind of enjoying this quiet. I'm reading those comics that I wanted to read. I'm watching those DVDs or those movies, or I'm going through my Sky Planner. You know, finally, I'm going to watch the second season of Arrow, or whatever the fuck it was you got saved up. Two, this is really quite annoying. What is happening? All these people are dying. You know, it was a real strange time, wasn't it? It's got a sort of, I'm going to say, like a scrapbook approach to it. and she uses in a similar way, but visually, in the same way that Gareth, who we talked to last week, talked about his moment-to-moment thoughts that he describes amongst his abstract art, has a poetic nature to it. The visual prompts that she uses are the little moments of the day, for example, the text messages, or she's putting a plant on a shelf, or she catches a squirrel at the bird feeder, and stuff like that. And it's a really interesting one. It also has behind it has this philosophy of how you need to spend some time looking after yourself. I think, she deals with that in an interesting way, in a quirky and a well-meaning and an upbeat way. She says, look, we're all going to be down about this. We're almost in grief, aren't we? We have this issue with what's going on in the world, and being lonely perhaps, or being sad, or being, upset by what it is, but you've got to look after yourself. It's on Kickstarter at the moment. I backed it. I think it's got about 24 days to go. It's only a small goal. I don't know why it is. I kind of admire people with small goals on Kickstarter. I don't know why. I just think, that's quite a
or in life.
Goal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's not take the piss. Yeah. So it's currently, I think, about 180%. I backed it, but I like her stuff. It's not perhaps for everyone. It's a little bit indie. It's a little bit quirky. It's a bit small press, but I like her approach to stuff. And she's always an interesting creator with, like I say, bags of enthusiasm, some great little drawings, and there's an emotion, and I'd buy any book with emotion in it against a book that's just a technical drawing. Put it that way, I think.
Fair enough.
I think she manages that. And if you go to Twitter, she's at Querstrit, which is Q-U-E-R-S-T-R-E-T. So at Querstrit, you can find her on Twitter, and you can follow links from there to the Kickstarter. But it's on Kickstarter, and it's called My Grief. It's good stuff. I like her stuff, and she's always funny. We must get her on one day. I know we've done a little odd interviews with her.
Yeah, that'd be great.
She's funny. Yeah, very funny. There you go. That's my one, guys.
Amazing. And what a list of things for you to check out this week, folks. As always, we hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Thank you again to Richard for joining us. He'll be back in the future to talk about Stormfalls again. No, I'm not going to go on about that again. But I am going to get in touch with him about it. Anyway, if there's anything we talked about this week...
Stormforce.
don't tempt me, Frollo. If there's anything we spoke about this week that you want to let us know about, or discuss, or what do you want to hear more about on this show, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod, where we'll be retweeting just cool, nice comic stuff, let you know what we've got coming up. And also join us on Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. If you want to get involved on the conversation, of which there'll probably be a bit of chatter, there's always a little bit of chatter whenever we post up the latest episode. There's always a nice bit of chat that happens every week.
We've got the competition going,
yes,
to design the look of Waltergeist. It's due for the 30th of September, so you've got a good couple of weeks to go on that.
Oh, splendid. Splendid. So go to Awesome Comics Talk, get involved, and if you want to have some creative fun, do that as well, because they're sort of like the top posts, aren't they, really? I think the episode and the latest competition and stuff. But
there's loads going on there at the moment.
If you just want to talk
about... Gary Hill bought the latest, bought a set of those Narrata cards.
I saw that. Nice. Yeah, that was good. Yeah.
Nice.
See? We should have a go at that again at some point in the future.
Yeah, Dave, we need Dave back. Dave was classic.
Yeah. His romance comic. involving horses. You got to listen to the episode to know what we're talking about and be haunted by it. But yes, definitely join us on Facebook there. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website, awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. And just get the word out about this show so more people discover comics, old, new, what's coming next, what came before, etc. And we'll love you for it if you say nice words about us, because we're shameless. Of course we're shameless. We're on the internet. Anyone who's on the internet
talking
wants
about
attention.
Ourselves.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's what we're in it for. The glory. Oh, God. You can also listen to us on places like Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Jane McDonald Does Kung Fu.
That could be something coming soon. We'll find out.
We're still on Jane McDonald watch. She's still not replied.
McDonald watch, which is Jane McDonald, you have to, because otherwise that conglomerate will be on you like everything. but where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Tributepress.bigcartel.com. We've got Jeremy, who's going up soon, our new book, which will be going out as well with the most recent Kickstarter, the Knockout and Tiger Style Kickstarter, which is going out next week.
Nice.
That's where you can find all your
filth. I believe it's the word you're looking for.
No, well, not safe for work.
Not safe for work, filth.
Comic needs. Yeah, because he's not running that kind of site. Or is he? You'll have to click on the link to find out. Dan, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Cool. Nice. Which you should. So you can read Vanguard, think, how the hell did he do that, or learn how to do that, and then check out some of the links about the Procreate stuff.
A few guest stars this week as well.
Yeah.
Dan? Yeah.
Was it? Yeah, there's a couple of small press characters that pop up.
Yeah, good stuff.
This week's Vanguard.
Cheeky boy. And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter, etc., at Jester Diablo, where I'm feeling the need to do a bit more sketching. I've got an idea for something I want to draw.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, who knows? I'm not going to make any promises.
It's probably best to do it now, because you'll just be mullered by this time next week. When you'll be...
Dear God.
Yeah.
Rich, if I need you to save me, where can I find you on social media, etc.?
Nicely done.
Good segue. You can find me at Richard and Sheaf. Or you can find me at theboysadventurecomic.blogspot.com.
Cool. There you go. So go
every morning I look at it. A little pops up onto my Facebook. I look at it every morning. Yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. So fair play. I mean, you're a champ for doing it for that long. It's amazing. And keep it coming, because we're going to keep doing it.
I will.
There you go. Yeah, he's got it on the record now. So he has to now. That's how it works. No, it's not. No, not all. But we do appreciate you all for listening. We hope wherever you are, you're reading loads of comics, you're having fun, you're staying safe, you're healthy, and we love you, don't we, guys?
Hell yeah.
Not really.
Hell yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, you know, it's a majority vote, and so I can say that we do love you.
I'll just sit at the back and watch then. That's right.
No, that's not how it works. you're either in the boat.
I'm not getting involved. You're not. In this love making.
You are involved. When you said yes, I'll do a podcast with you, you became involved.
That was
six
years ago.
So.
Listen, I'll get involved in the love making next weekend, my friend.
Dear God. Thank you for listening to the show for the past few years. This will be the last episode.
It's just think of it as when we're at a convention and me and Dan are just shouting at you. But we'll be more alcohol involved and maybe some naked ladies.
Just stay tuned next week to find out what a bunch of lies that was. until then, thank you for listening, everyone. Have a brilliant week. From Dan, Tony, Richard and myself. Read loads of comics. Stay wonderful. And as always, what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Butcher, where were you?
Fuck. That was awful.
That's brilliant. That's the best one we've done.
Yeah. It doesn't get better than that. Bye, everyone.
See ya. See you later.
See you later.